Pushkin.
We're really sad at Broken Record to hear about the passing of Justin Townes Earle. We recorded an interview with him some time ago, before the coronavirus put in-studio conversations on hold for us. Bruce Headlam met up with him at GSI Studios in Manhattan. Justin played some music. They talked. As you'll hear, Justin was a gifted performer and songwriter. He was the son of outlaw country musician Steve Earle and got his middle name from his dad's mentor, Townes Van Zandt. Both Steve and Townes struggled with addiction, and so did Justin for most of his life. He talks with Bruce about his personal troubles in this episode pretty candidly, and their conversation about racial tensions in America seems prescient now. Justin identified with people on the margins. He wrote fantastic songs detailing fringe lives with tremendous heart. They were full of desperation, humor, and specificity in the best of the Southern songwriting tradition. We had this interview scheduled to run next month in September. When we heard yesterday morning that Justin passed over the weekend, we weren't sure we should run this at all. There's some really deeply sad moments in this conversation with Bruce. But there's also a lot of soul. So in the end, we thought you might all enjoy spending some time with Justin Townes Earle. His talent in life, for better or worse, really shines through. We also hope you spend some time with his music, whether you're returning to it or just discovering it for the first time. This is Broken Record, liner notes for the digital age. I'm Justin Richmond. Here's Bruce Headlam with Justin Townes Earle. He starts with the performance of a song from his last release, The Saint of Lost Causes.
Detroit rock, baby, that's a fact. And body said, Devin, better get back. Jack, but you gotta be tough. It's a good time to be had. Not like I think everybody here knows that. So let's talk about a place you might not know. It's just a little further on up the road where you know about the meat. Now, baby, let's get down to them bones. I'll tell you about a place that really made America roll. Alright, well, Flint City shake it, Flint City shake it. Let them all know, how you let them all know. Detroit rock, Flint City rolls. Well, today we ain't what we used to be. Well, whole lot of trouble come to our streets, and the only one to blame now's GMC. If you don't know, baby, let me tell you how I mean. We built Buick cars, GM trucks, Chevy engines, they see spark plugs, build planes for the war back in 41. Every piece straight from the ground on up. Trouble come in 86. This son of a bitch named Roger Smith, well, he cut our throat the stroke of a fountain pen. That's right. And well, we've been knocked down, but we're gonna get up again. And why's that? Cause Flint City shake it. Flint City shake it. You let them all know. You let them all know. Detroit Ryan, Flint City Rose. Well, ain't no work and everybody's hurting. I've been that way for a while. They ain't got us licked just yet. You know Flint City knows how to have a good time. Well, we might be poor and might be rough, but just good people down on our luck. And though it really feels nobody cares about us, we just ain't the kind that's gonna give up. Cause Flint City shake it. Flint City shake it. Let them all know, you let them all know. And Detroit rock, Flint City Rose. Detroit rockin' Flint City Rose.
Justin Towns Earl with Flint City Shake It?
Flint City Shake It.
All right.
Yeah.
That was quite an opening. Thank you so much.
You got to start out fast, man.
Yeah? You always start your concerts fast?
I like to, you know.
Yeah.
Try to, you know. But, you know, you got to give them something to see, right?
Yeah.
They ain't going to come out there and stare. You know, very few people can get that, you know, the Jeff Buckley, you know, do that thing where you could stare at your shoes and get away with it. He was great. I saw it live. I couldn't do that.
Yeah.
I like the show to start. It's like, I don't want to see nobody come out on stage and tune. It's like, when I walk out, I want my guitar tuned for me and hand it to me and let's go.
So tell me about the writing of that song.
Flint City Shake It. Well, you know, I think it was the first song I wrote for this record.
Mm-hmm.
And it tied into this thing where I was looking at the way, you know how like Springsteen made New Jersey so cool.
Sure.
He made you feel New Jersey. Or before, who you know, but you know, you listen to him, you know, working on the highway and things like that. Mm-hmm. Like you get this mysticism about it and this thing where he made it romantic, made Jersey romantic.
Yeah.
That Bon Jovi sure as shit couldn't do that. You know, so what I wanted to do is take that same, which he's a Woody Guthrie disciple, right? Mm-hmm. Which I am too. I wanted to take that same idea, but apply it to all of America. So I wrote Flint City Shake It. Then I wrote Saint of Lost Causes. Then I wrote Appalachian Nightmare. You know, about Appalachia. I wrote Ahi Esta Mi Niña. You know, about I based that on my basis was a Puerto Rican kid from the East Village that from the Alphabets who got locked up on mandatory minimums when he was young.
Oh.
And got off a prison bus and met his daughter for the first time. That's what Ahi Esta Mi Niña is about.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like that's that the whole idea. And it's like I wrote Over Alameda about a kid from the Jordan Downs housing projects in South Central Los Angeles.
It's a very old impulse in American music that I think has been lost. I mean, Springsteen wrote about
very
New Jersey.
Lost.
But he, you know, he's from New Jersey. He wrote about other places as well. But
oh yeah,
what is it about those songs or those kinds of songs that people like Woody Guthrie used to write? What do you think that you say? Like, you know, everybody's Americans, but in a weird way, the beauty of those songs is it makes different parts of the country more mysterious, isn't it?
Well, I mean, I think too is like, yeah, it's like, I mean, I hope that it makes it mysterious. I hope that it makes people intrigued by different parts of the country. I hope it makes somebody figure out that, like, you know, if you lived in LA from the 1940s until now, over Alameda, that was the dividing line.
Mm-hmm. It was a dividing line between
black and white.
Was this, so Flint City was the first song on this album, on your new album. Did it kind of set the tone for you with this album? Was it characteristic of what you wanted to do?
Well, I always have a conceptual idea about my records, even from the start, even from The Good Life. I had this concept of it, even though that's light. Like my early records, they were light, except Midnight at the Movies was pretty conceptual. I based that on Gregory Corso's book, Mind Fields.
Mm-hmm.
Harlem River Blues, I based on Moving Here, things like that. But I always know exactly where I want to start and where I want to end. And that goes with songs and records. Because, I mean, it's just like I'm not pissing in the wind. You know, it's like I'm here to, you know, if you want to be an artist, it's like I write about 12, 13 songs a year. They go on my records. I think Saint of Lost Causes, the song,
yeah,
took me about 6 months to write.
What did it start as? Did it start as with a lick, with a lyrical idea? What was the genesis?
It started with this idea of I was looking at, it's like, you know, you're looking at people like Eric Gardner getting choked out by cops, the Me Too movement, all these things of all these people, like, you know, it's like, wait, people, anybody, black people, Mexicans, you know, women, we've treated them like horribly over. And so what I was trying to get at was the fact that if you keep poking at the underclass, what you call the underclass, you know, you keep poking at us, eventually we're going to strike back and you won't like it.
Okay. So was it stuff in the news you were reading or stuff you were seeing up close that
stuff
started
I've lived through? Stuff I've lived through. I mean, you know, it's like everybody, I'm Steve Earle's son, but my daddy was, I mean, my mom was number three of eight wives, you know, and he was gone before I was two. I grew up with my mother. I mean, I grew up, you know what makes the best grilled cheese sandwich in the world? Government cheese. In the cardboard box, the best damn grilled cheese sandwich you can get. And I know that because I grew up, you know, I grew up with my mother who worked three jobs. I grew up with, you know, and I gravitated toward a lot of dangerous people. I've always been a street level kind of person.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to go to your martini bar and sit there and bullshit. I want to go to the darkest, dimmest, most dangerous bar you got, and let's get down with the people.
Right.
Because that's how most people live.
So that's where the song came from, those memories, that idea?
All of it, yeah.
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 Well,
yeah.
You said that's where you want to start with the album. Where did you want to go with the album?
What I wanted to go with was actually when I wrote Saint of Lost Causes, the song, mm-hmm. which we'll play next.
Yep.
I knew, I was just like, okay, that's it. Now we got to add up to that.
Is it something you map out very consciously or is it just a feeling? Yeah.
Very, yeah.
So when you're writing the next song, you've got your last song in mind?
I usually know where I want to end before I know where I want to begin. I mean, you just keep working until you finish the record. I mean, until you feel like you got to start, I mean, you got to finish. Mm-hmm. It's a thesis. You need a hard beginning, a middle, and an end.
Yeah.
And only the most pertinent information.
Are you that way as a lyrical writer? You say you've got a...
Oh, shit. You ought to see my notebook. I mean, if somebody stole one of my notebooks,
mm-hmm.
You may get two songs because it's just page after page of just rewrites and rewrites and mm-hmm. rewrites. And I always write in number two pencils and steno pads.
Mm-hmm. Always use the same kind of pad.
I like to.
You're one of. Are you very precise in that way?
Well, you know, the only thing that I, you know, the pad. I like cinema pads. It ain't necessarily the pad ain't the thing, but the number two pencil is the thing.
Okay.
Because you can erase it.
Oh.
When you get a bad idea, but you got to remember when you had a decent idea that maybe you didn't work out just right,
mm-hmm.
and leave that and not erase it. So you can go back and look at it and find another way to toy it around and you know, and get it right. Get it right that time.
I was reading this biography of Guy Clark, and they reproduced some of his notebooks. And it was sort of done impeccably and hardly any revisions, which kind of just stunned me. Maybe they're just showing the good pages, not the messy pages.
Well, no, he's the guy who told my dad, always write number two pencil.
Was that right?
And my dad told me, always write number two pencil. Yeah, so he erased everything that he didn't like.
Oh, okay, that's why.
Yeah.
All right, so you cover up your history. I'm going to...
You can, but you can only... But you got to always remember, is like we can't all be as good as Guy Clark. So we have to hang on to where we came from, you know, sometimes. You have to know what to hang on to. You know, keep two eyes on the ground, pick up what you find, but be careful what you keep.
Why don't we hear Saint of Lost Causes and then keep talking?
Let's do that. I'm a bad dream. Not a nightmare, I'm too pretty for that. Let's say I'm the last thing you wanna see coming. I'm the reason they say watch it back.
But for so long, I was like a wounded hound, backed up to a chain link fence. And the world at large was like a big mean kid, just poking me through that fence with a stick. That's nothing can be done. That's just the way it goes. But then lies one of life's biggest lessons. Ain't got nothing to do with deserving. You just pray to the saint of lost causes. Now it's a cruel world. Oh, but it ain't hard to understand. You got your sheeps, you got your shepherds, got your wolves in amongst men. Now it can be hard to tell. Might find a wolf in shepherd's clothes. Now and then you're gonna find sheep in amongst all them troubled souls. And there's nothing can be done. It's just the way that it goes. Yeah. First you get bad, then you get mean, then there's nothing left to but grow cold. Oh, and just pray to the saint of lost causes. Now some might say I've got no faith, no heart and surely no shame. Truth is that this has been with me so long that I must admit I kinda like the pain. So how many encounters you ever had? Better yet, how many wolves you ever even seen? Got about as much chance running into one of them as you do running into me. You still take nothing for granted. Might live on the best block in Beverly Hills. You be sure you lock up tight at night, cause you know poor folks ain't got nothing to steal. They just pray all of this saint of lost causes. Alright. Oh no, 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 they pray. Oh, they pray all of the saint of lost causes.
So for people listening, wondering how many guitars are playing on that song, it's just you, just one guitar. But you've got this very interesting way you strum and pick kind of at the same time.
I call it sleight of hand.
Okay.
I learned a bit of it from Malcolm Hokum.
Okay. It was, yeah.
Great song. Sun House.
Mm-hmm.
Did this. I mean, this. Right. But you got to do is figure out this thing is like, you know, you got to get your fingers bent.
I'm looking at some very bent fingers here.
Very bent. And this thumb looks like a canoe paddle. I mean, but you get this.
The other thing I was going to say is, and this isn't very common anymore, your stuff really swings.
Oh, man, I swing like a pendulum.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you got to swing. I mean, if you don't know how to shake your ass, then you, I mean, that's something, I mean.
Did you get that from Western swing?
I got that from the blues. I got that from the blues. I mean, I got that from listening to, but you know, I got it from Stax. I got it from Hank Williams, but you know what? where Hank Williams, think about country before Hank Williams, right? It was just like, oh, yes, and we're going to this, and all on top of the beat.
Right.
Not that it wasn't good, but it was all on top of the beat. Hank Williams goes down to the Louisiana Hayride, and somehow, you know, everybody's like, oh, Hank Williams did this. It's like all he did was introduce the 12-bar blues to country music.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where before it'd be like, I'm going down to the river and I'm going, na, 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 na. But Hank Williams comes in and goes, I'm going down to the river, gonna dig my, you know, it's like, whoa, drop back, sit back, relax.
Right.
Relax. I mean, relax about it.
But some of your earlier songs, like I'm thinking The Good Life, the song, that was very Western swing.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, Western swing was definitely a part of what I love. But it was weird how I got into, like, I'm not, it's more like when I think about Western swing, I think about Moon Mullican. You know, these stranger, Emmett Miller.
Mm-hmm.
I think of these different things.
Emmett Miller, who wrote Lovesick Blues.
He wrote the Lovesick Blues. And you know what? Hank Williams definitely saw Emmett Miller when he was down in Louisiana.
Is that right?
Without question. Emmett
Miller did. He did Ragtime. I think he was.
He was a blackface performer. He was a white guy who painted his face black and performed in blackface. Old minstrel show kind of thing.
Yeah. And people don't really know how, because it's so politically fraught, how influential a lot of minstrel show music was.
I mean, here's the deal. It's like people need to understand this about what the minstrel show did. The minstrel show, for the first time, before, it's like you lived in a holler somewhere, or you lived in a bio somewhere, or you lived on a ranch somewhere, or even if you lived in a city, you knew a version of a song because your uncle knew how to play it, and he played it on Saturday night when y'all gathered together, you know, for your gathering. So everybody knew these different versions, like nobody's versions were the same, right? This was before records were made, right? You know? So it's like nobody knew the same versions. For the first time, the minstrel show travels. It travels, and it introduces America to a uniformed song. Like that's how you play that song. You know, that idea, you know, it was the very first widespread given to all of America at the time, music that we had.
Before radio,
before records could be made. Mm-hmm. And I mean, and of course, there is always going to be this stigma about it because, you know, even black people had to paint their face black to be in a minstrel show, you know, mm-hmm. right? Hell yeah, that's fucked up.
Yeah.
I mean, what the minstrel show did for American music, we would not have American music the way that we have it if it was not for the minstrel show.
Mm-hmm.
We wouldn't.
We'll be back with more from Justin Towns Earl after the break. We're back with more of Bruce's conversation with Justin Towns Earl.
Do you remember the first song you wrote?
I do. Halfway to Jackson.
So the first song you ever wrote in life ended up on an
finished
album?
Yeah. Well, a lot of the songs on The Good Life.
Yeah.
A couple of them. I wrote Halfway to Jackson when I was 14. Ain't Glad I'm Leaving when I was 15. Turn Out My Lights when I was 15, Rogers Park.
Turn On My Lights could be a George 17. Jones song. What were you listening to back then that helped you write those songs?
Those songs were back then. Like, I mean, those were the few. Like, I can't remember all the songs on that record, but those were the few that were the old songs that I'd had since I was a kid. Because I was 25 when New Life came out. So those were the ones that lasted. Right. I wrote a ton of shit back then, but when I was a teenager, tons. And a lot of it's embarrassing as hell. But you got to go through that. Yeah. You know, you got to write bad songs, try them out. I mean, and I mean, it's not like, you know, I used to write a song and, you know, I'd like run down to Dad's studio when he'd be working, like run down and be like, hey, look at this. He'd be like, yep, go back to the drawing board, son. He was hard as hell on me about it.
Yeah, because you, how old were you when you started playing with his band?
I was 15.
Wow. What did you see of the music business when you were 15 on the road?
I knew it was better than selling dope and going to prison.
Yeah.
Which was what I was going to do. I was going to follow my, you know, mom's side of the family down the rabbit hole.
Right.
I'd be dead or I'd be in prison, period. And you know what? If this ever ends, I can't make no money. I'll probably end up in prison. I mean, because I only know two ways to make money. Okay. Only one's legal.
All right. We're going to help you with this way because, you know, of course you get 3 square meals.
I mean, as long as you know how to get your, you know, you get your Zuzus and Wham Whams, I mean, you know, you'll be fine.
So I'm kind of wondering this because, you know, particularly with music, a lot of music is pop music and rock music is born in rebellion. When you have a father who's kind of such a rebel himself, how do you rebel against that? How did you separate yourself from your father's influence?
You can't. And you don't, because if you try to, if I said Steve Earle had no influence on my songwriting and that he wasn't one of my heroes as a songwriter, that would be the biggest lie I could tell, you know.
Was that the case when you were 14?
Well, we kind of just started getting to know each other when I was 14.
You know? You knew his music, though.
Of course, you know, but I, you know, it's an interesting thing. I mean, you have to realize that, like, any of those sons and daughters of, they're like, I don't want nothing, don't talk about my dad. I want nothing to do with my dad or my mom. It's like, the fuck you think you are? And it's like you have to find your own way into this. Nobody can tell me that I rode my daddy's coattails into this fucking business because my dad can't play like me. I can't write like him, and he can't write like me. Mm. We have a different, I mean, we have distinct things that we do differently. And we've done since I started making records, I think we've done 5 shows together.
What's that like when you play together?
5 shows, though.
Yeah, but what's it like when you play together?
It's something else. You want to see two Earls butt heads? Holy shit. I mean, it is. It's something else. Especially when we start playing together and I was doing songs together. And I always like to take one of his songs that he likes to do and like play one of his songs that I know he's going to play just so he can't do it. And things like that. But no, it's definitely a headbutting thing. But I remember the first time, you know, my dad telling me, go back to the drawing board. I mean, I used to play from noon until 7 p.m. at the Springwater in Nashville every Thursday. Noon until 7 p.m. just playing and playing and playing and playing covers and songs that I wrote. But, you know, it's like he, you know, I had to get that test in. You had to build all that up. Had to build all that up. I wrote a lot of songs. And he said, go back to the drawing board. But I remember the first time when I wrote Maria, I can't remember what record it's on. I think it's on Midnight or something. I can't fucking remember. But when I wrote Maria, he came and saw me at Radio Cafe in Nashville. I was with my band, The Swindlers, at the time. And we played Maria last. And when I came off stage, my dad goes, well, hey, what was that Elvis Costello song you played? I said, we didn't play an Elvis Costello song. He goes, the last song. I said, that's Maria. I was like, that's mine. He goes, really? And I went, hell yeah. That was the first, like,
oh really?
I was like, yep, duh. And you know, and I still can make him cry with Mama's Eyes.
Mm-hmm. Can you play the first 2 bars of Mama's Eyes? Because that's pertinent to this conversation.
Wait. Let's see. I have to do a little bit of tuning for a second, but when I wrote this song, I mean, like, it was like, you know, it's like you got to be ballsy, you know? And I love the fact that when I came up with that first line that, you know,
I am my father's son. Never known when to shut up.
You know, that, like, right there, when I did that, I was just like, when I came up, I was just like, hell, I'm onto something.
Yeah.
I'm onto something.
What did he say when he first heard that?
He actually, the first time he saw it was at a show. He came and saw, I can't remember where we were. We were at the Ryman Auditorium opening for Old Crow, I think. And Dad shows up, you know, like proud papa on the sides, and I do mama's eyes, and you know, and you can see, I mean, I, you know, I kind of peek over and, like, you see him shrink a little on the, and after the show, I was just like, okay, he was like, hey, great show. He's like, mama's eyes is a really fucking good song. There was this resignation in it. He was just like, so I think that I found this thing in speaking the truth, telling it the way that it is.
Mm-hmm. And he respects that.
Absolutely, because he created me.
Even though he wasn't there for that, for a good part of
it. Well, that creates a lot of a boy. I'm a boy that doesn't grow up with a father.
Mm-hmm.
It grows up alone. You know, a mother that works three jobs, who's molested, beaten, and abandoned, you know, after Dad left. You know, what? You think that ain't gonna shape?
Mm-hmm.
You know what? I was pissed at Dad for a long time. It took us a long time to have a relationship. Long time.
You write a lot about mothers. You wrote an album, Single Mothers, Absent Fathers. You've got another one on this album. The Nina song.
Oh, Ahi Esta Mi Nina.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, that was like, that's a dad getting off, you know, Ami Esmeralda, he's a sight for sore eyes. I'm just off the bus from Clinton. They put me out on the Bowery. I'm on my way home to see mommy now. Fancy seeing you along the way. Yeah. Don't go. Ain't you got a minute for your old man? Let me buy you something to eat. Just a cup of coffee from the bodega. I was hoping we might get a chance to speak, you know.
And that was someone you knew. That's based on.
It's a composite of a few people that I knew. I lived in the alphabets for years, and I mean, people who, I mean, don't nobody needs to be mistaken by anything. It's like alphabets are still strongly Puerto Rican,
right?
You know, and the influence there is something else.
Yeah.
But that whole idea of like you know, the Puerto Rican people came here in the 1950s, started filling into this town as soon as they could, looking for a better life. They speak great English. They speak Spanish between each other. But when you're talking to them, the only time that they, if you're talking just like, you know, sitting at the bar talking, you know, with them, and it's like a bunch of non-Spanish speakers, they're talking perfect English. But, you know, they, you know, hit their thumb, chingale punta madre, you know. So it's like emotional things that makes this,
right?
You know, this thing come up. So, and I got this idea, adios to mi niña, my only child, eres mi niña, you know.
Now, you have no fear of you're taking the voice of a Puerto Rican father. You take the voice of a African-American kid,
mm-hmm,
in Alameda. You know, there's a lot of controversy about that now.
We're all Americans.
But?
We're all Americans.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's the thing, is like everybody needs to get the fuck over all that. Like, we're Americans. And you know what? It's like, you know, all the Puerto Rican kids that I knew when I lived in the alphabets,
mm-hmm,
weren't born in Puerto Rico. They were born in America. They may speak Spanish. Their mom may cook some spicy food. I lived in the 528. Oh, man, you should have smelled that building in the middle of the day. Oh, shit. All the doors open and the cooking going. It was good. But the deal is they're Americans.
Right, but a writer could say to you, yeah, but you're a white American, you've got a certain experience. I grew up as a black kid in that neighborhood, I see it a different way. What is it like to take on that voice?
Well,
then?
don't make sure that you think about it before you say it. I don't think I say anything that would offend anybody in those songs. I mean, I may offend corporate America, but I ain't going to offend a Puerto Rican with Ay Esta Mi Niña. I'm not going to offend any black man with Over Alameda. Mm-hmm.
We'll have more of Justin Towns Earl after the break. We're back with Justin Towns Earl.
Why don't we hear your next song first?
No.
What are you going to play?
I'm just kidding. No, I got it. We'll do Frightened by the Sound.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Silence broken, thunder roll, followed by the bright lights from a lightning strike. Wind is picking up to a low mark. I feel the pressure dropping. Rain starting, stop, storm coming. Though it's gone this now, a storm coming. Don't be frightened by the sound of a moment of silence, uneasy still, followed by the steady rain. Heart against the window pane. Now keep an eye on the river. It's already up. There's no need to worry yet, but let us not forget it. Last time the rain come down like this, so much was lost. We'll never know the true cost. Storm coming, the way it's gonna miss us now. A storm coming, don't be frightened by the sound. There's so much at stake. How far will it go? Only a fool would place such a bet on which way the wind's gonna blow. Just live on hope. We'll never get out alone. Storm coming, no, it's gonna mess us now. Storm coming, don't be frightened by the sound. Don't be frightened by the sound.
I mentioned before some of your songs could have been Merle Haggard songs, George Jones songs. That could be a Paul Westerberg song.
When I recorded Can't Hardly Wait on Midnight at the Movies, it's on Midnight.
Oh, that's
at the
right, you did, yeah.
Yeah, and it was.
We should say Paul Westerberg, writer for The Replacements.
The Replacements, great, for all you people who don't know, look it up. You got your head in your phone.
So the song you just played, Frightened by the Sound, where, you know, you talked about kind of the arc of this album, where you started, where you ended up. Where is that along that line?
It's just telling everybody that, you know, just don't be afraid when the storm starts.
Mm-hmm.
And it will.
But it's kind of a scary, it's funny because you're saying don't be frightened. It's kind of a scary song.
It is.
Yeah.
But I mean, but it's like, but what really, what can we be scared of these days? I mean, if you're really in this day, and I mean, if you're my age at least, right? I grew up through the crack cocaine epidemic, the introduction of assault rifles to the streets, carjackings, two Bushes, and now Trump.
Mm-hmm.
What are you going to be afraid of? I mean, we better get tough. And realize that there's, you know, what's there to be scared of? I mean, the worst thing that can happen is you die.
Well, there's that.
I mean, and it's over. What you got to worry about then? Don't be afraid of something.
What's your life as a musician now? Is it, because I looked at your schedule, you tour a lot.
I tour a lot. I'm a good dad.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a terrible husband, but I'm really good at what I do for a living. I know how to live on the road.
Yeah.
I know how to do the shows. I know how to be tits and teeth. You know, the show goes on, get it done. But what I'm bad at, get me off the road for a week, 2 weeks. I want to beat my head against the porcelain, just, I mean, like it drives me insane.
I like being on the road.
I don't know how it works. I mean, I don't know how it works. I've been doing this since I was 14 years old.
Mm-hmm.
I've been touring since I was 15. I mean, like what else do I know? You know, my wife is like, you're messy. I was like, I'm sorry. I'm used to hotel rooms. I'm gone the next day. My problem, like, you know, it's like, I'm bad at it. My dad was never good at it, you know?
Yeah.
But we committed to this. We, you know, this is the thing. It's like anybody who wants to be around me, be with me, is understand that this is what I do. That's what I'm going to do. I do not want to die at home. I want to die in a tour bus. Years from now. But I do not want to die sitting on my damn couch.
You know, you're not in Nashville anymore. You grew up in East Nashville, but...
I didn't grow up in East Nashville.
Oh, I thought you did.
No. I grew up in South Nashville. The only time we went to East Nashville was when our cousins got out of prison and our aunt was having a cookout.
Okay. This is one of the things that obsess people in country music. What's your relationship to Nashville? What's Nashville doing? What's the Nashville sound now? How do you look at what's coming out of Nashville now?
Well, there's a lot of cool stuff coming out of Nashville right now. But I hate the bro country shit.
Mm-hmm.
I hate it. I mean, most of the stuff coming off Music Row, it's horrible. I mean, horrible. But there's a lot of cool stuff that goes on in Nashville.
You mentioned bluegrass, and there's a terrific song on your album, which is, there's many terrific songs. The one that really stood out for me was Appalachian Nightmare.
Oh, yeah.
Which is, and you say you don't want to sing it because it has too many words.
I can't remember the fucker. Yeah, I can't.
Yeah, it's got a lot of words.
It's got a lot of fucking words.
But it's an outlaw song. It's not quite a murder ballad.
No.
But it's an outlaw song, which has got that's something else. It's got a real pedigree in
country, yes.
In much older music. Like,
well, you know, that was one of the few songs that I did take kind of like when I was writing that, when I got to the end, I was like, I'm going to make this guy kill a cop, and I'm not going to say it in the song. Mm-hmm. I suggest it.
Was there a particular story you were thinking of with the new one, Appalachian Nightmare? Was it a news event or something, or was it just from your imagination?
No, it's from friends. It's from friends. I lived in Johnson City, Tennessee for a while, up around Pokey, Tennessee. Mm-hmm. And what goes on up in those hollers, I mean, it's something else. I mean, it's a world unto itself that I know a place, Butler Holler, like in the 90s, Butler Holler up around Pokey, Tennessee, the police wouldn't go down Butler Holler. They wouldn't go down the road. There was one road in, one road out.
Yeah.
And it was just like, it was just trailers like tilted on these. But it was, you know, meth cooking, pill snorting. Like, I mean, I remember there was this great robbery and I was living in Johnson City. This was I remember this because it's amazing. These two guys evidently pull up in front of a drugstore in downtown Johnson City on a dirt bike. One of them has a 50-gallon garbage can, and they both have some kind of assault rifle strapped over their shoulders. They go in, you know, motorcycle helmets on, 50-gallon garbage can, you know, stick it up and, like, fill it and just rake everything, all the pills, everything into that 50-gallon garbage can. Run out, get back on the bike, take it, and they put a strap around themselves.
Right.
And right as they were pulling out, the cops got on them. So they took off of 87, took up Unicoi Highway. And at that point, Unicoi Highway wasn't finished. It ended. And it was just like a bridge that just stopped. Cops were following them. Boom! Dirt bike just right off that bridge. Up the hills. Gone.
Yeah?
Gone.
Wow.
They couldn't follow them. They couldn't do nothing. I was smart as hell. That's some hillbilly ingenuity, if you tell me. But, you know, you wait about 4 months and then the town was flooded with pills.
Right. Are those stories still, you still want to tell those kind of stories?
Yeah, because they're real stories. I mean, if we really think that most people, most people in America ain't got a pot to piss in. And who are we to tell them? You know, I do what I do to support my daughter. I don't care what happens. Mm-hmm. I'm going to do what I got to do. And I think they think the same way. You're going to do what you got to do.
Our hearts go out to the friends and family of Justin Towns Earl. You can hear his last album, The Saint of Lost Causes, by checking out our playlist at brokenrecordpodcast.com. And be sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/brokenrecordpodcast, where you can find extended cuts of past episodes and also new ones. Broken Record is produced with help from Leah Rose, Jason Gambrell, Martin Gonzalez, Eric Sandler, and is executive produced by Mia LaBelle. Thanks to our CEO, Jacob Weisberg, and our president, Malcolm Gladwell. Broken Record is a production of Pushkin Industries. Follow us at Pushkin Pods and The Broken Record Pod on social media. And if you like Broken Record, please remember to share, rate, and review our show on your podcast app. I'm Justin Richmond. Peace.